Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. In this episode number 506, I'm welcoming to the show Ian Cron.
Everybody should really understand the 12 steps and consider them as a way of life around which they could organize their faith. And it's genius. And when you think about it, these groups meet in the basement of churches, and people upstairs have no idea what's going on downstairs and the miracles that are happening on a regular basis in those rooms.
If Ian's name seems familiar to you, maybe you've read his quintessential book on Enneagram called The Road Back to You. He is not only an author, but a speaker and a trained psychotherapist, songwriter, and Episcopal priest. And today, he is vulnerably sharing his own journey through addiction and sobriety and this process that you may have heard of, 12-step, AA, Al-Anon. Well, his book's called The Fix, and he's helping make 12 steps accessible to people to recognize that we are not good at managing our life, that the solution is not us. Self-help is a fallacy. That we need a divine source to allow and surrender to that divine source for ultimate healing and transformation. If you've heard of 12-step, if you've heard of AA or Al-Anon, and you've been curious, my hope is listening to this episode is your half step to working through the 12 steps for whatever is holding you back, whether it is a phone addiction, a success addiction, approval addiction. We all have something that is holding us back, and we're ready to be transformed. Your best move after listening is to show a similar kindness to a friend and tell them about this episode. You help our community, and you help another mom know she is not alone. All right, let's get right to it. Here we go. Ian, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I finally get to chat with you live. I'm so excited.
Heather, I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, I'll tell you, my story intersected with yours when I read your book, The Road Back to You, and I had never heard of Enneagram, and so I'm very thankful for that work that you did, and I know that's been a big part of your journey. What was interesting reading your latest book, The Fix, was your mention of a challenging season in your life, which I think we'll start with you kind of sharing that because it's integral in you writing this book. That you mentioned it was in 2020. And when I was searching in my calendar for when this interview was, what popped up was that I had a Zoom call that you were leading in April of 2020. And I was super curious to know the intersection of you continuing to do ministry while you were in a hard place.
While doing ministry, I've had many hard places, and not all of them were drug and alcohol related. So, I mean, those seasons come and go. So yeah, I begin the book by talking about a relapse I had. So I first got sober in 1987, right, from drinking. And then in 2020, had a relapse on prescription medications, not opioids, but just sedatives and Adderall and et cetera. and went to treatment, and then decided for 4+ years to keep that with family and a few close friends and go to meetings and, you know, percolate on it. What did this mean? What's here? And then also, what's the invitation? Is there an invitation here? Because I'd say that my life's mission has been to introduce people to ideas and experiences that deepen and improve their lives. So the Enneagram was that. And I wrote about a book about Chasing Francis, about St. Francis. And that was that, you know. And I'm like, you know, the 12 steps have had such an amazing effect on my life. And it's just hard to believe that more people don't know about them and that they're for everybody. Like, anybody can tap into this incredible treasure trove of wisdom. And I'm like, I got to democratize these things and just talk about them. So I had to talk about it through the lens of my own missteps.
Yeah.
Because for me, that's what gave the whole conversation gravity and credibility.
Yeah. I always appreciate an author that's willing to go first, you know? I think the depth and the authenticity of the experience is by the leaders, whether it's a group or in this case, we're in the group with you reading the book. We're sitting in one of those chairs. And so thank you for doing that and being vulnerable. And so let's talk a little bit about maybe someone's never considered, even though they've listened to my show a lot of times and I say it a lot of times, they've never considered that 12-step could be for anyone outside of quote unquote addicts, as if we aren't all in some way addicts. So talk to us about that.
Well, actually, we are all on the addiction continuum. I mean, that's just a fact. The great Christian psychiatrist Gerald May, who wrote a seminal book called Addiction and Grace, in it he writes, "To be human is to be addicted, and to be human and addicted is to stand in need of grace." So all human beings exist on the addiction continuum, need to be in recovery, right? Because we're all looking for a fix for the discomfort and the dis-ease and the distress that life presents us with on a regular basis, right? And whether it's food or sex or porn or drugs or drinking or people-pleasing or your technology, your phones, your need to be right. I mean, the list is endless of fixes that we come up with to make life more tolerable apart from God's involvement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the 12 steps is a, you know, it's a spiritual design for living that is completely continuous with, for example, the Christian faith. It actually puts wheels on it, right? It's like, oh, so this is how you do it, you know? And I'm like, everybody should really understand the 12 steps and consider them as a way of life around which they could organize their faith, right? It's like, and it's genius. And when you think about it, these groups meet in the basement of churches and people upstairs have no idea what's going on downstairs and the miracles that are happening on a regular basis in those rooms. And it's like, y'all ought to go downstairs because that's where the real transformation might be found for you. You know, it's ironic that the secret is in the basement, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying everything upstairs isn't good or that it's lesser than. I'm just saying there's something really magical happening downstairs and you all ought to check it out.
It's this quote from one of your chapters. Most people settle for as much spiritual transformation as will let them get by.
Yeah.
And maybe for you, you're really at a high functioning. I almost think like we're talking about a mom podcast here. And I'm thinking of, I'm going to pull in a little Enneagram. Enneagram 2 moms. They get rewarded for their addictions, for their codependencies, for their overfunctioning for their kids. And I just think sometimes we're almost not even aware of them if they serve us well in the culture we're in or the stage we're in or the relationships we're in. So talk to us about that a little bit. How do we – like maybe the person listening is like, I'm good. It's working.
Yeah, for now. Or it's working, but it kind of makes my life borderline intolerable, right?
That.
Or I've just learned to live with a level of pain and discomfort as a result of my compulsions, and I wouldn't know how bad it is until I found help, you know? So what is an addiction? So that might be good to define.
Yeah, let's do it.
So an addiction is a compulsive, unhealthy relationship with a person, a behavior, or a substance that has mood-altering effects and negative consequences. Okay?
Yeah.
So we could go through each Enneagram type, and each of them, by the way, has an addiction, right?
Right, like a shadow side, like a...
Or a compulsion, right? Yeah. So, you know, ones have a compulsive, you know, need to perfect themselves, others in the world. And that is highly addictive. I mean, it's highly like, if I don't do this, I will get very anxious. It's like a drink, right? Like I need to, if I see something not right, I've got to fix it. And if I don't, I'm going to be like jumping out of my skin.
And that can be rewarded. That can get you a lot of money for being.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, twos you just mentioned, right? Threes, you know, this addiction to success, and that leads oftentimes to an unhealthy mood-altering relationship with negative consequences to work, right? I've seen more marriages blown up over, you know, a spouse that's a workaholic, can't stop working, their kids are estranged from them because they're never around, you know, on and on and on, right? And these are fixes, right? Like, it's a fix. Like, I'm trying to...
And he's using fix, like, not for the broken. Like, you're getting a fix out of it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean...
We don't need to talk about the fours. The fours are perfect.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely perfect. Yeah.
We're amazing.
We could go all the way through. We are amazing. but, you know, I really feel like, let's just even imagine, though, that your addictions are fairly benign. They're fairly harmless, right? Or they have very little impact on our lives. The fact of the matter is, how about if you just want happiness, joy, and freedom, and you really want to live out life on a spiritual basis, and you want to get your ego right-sized where you're not trying to run the world either subtly or not so subtly, and you just want to experience joy and happiness. Well, the 12 steps are for you.
Because you are trying to do it yourself.
Yes, that is the human condition, right? The ego is always trying to take hold of the wheel and be the director, the star, the producer, and the main character in that little melodrama you title your life, right? And so, you know, if you really want to experience freedom and you want to experience a sense that you have a plan, like most people spiritually, let me ask you a question. If I asked you or the typical person in a church or a synagogue or whatever you want to say, do you have a plan for transformation? What would most people say?
No, I mean, I feel like it would start with a salvation, which is like a total dependence on Jesus' work. And then it would move to total dependence on my work to keep up with the disciplines, to keep up with maintaining the faith that will transform.
Yeah. So I think most people would say it's kind of a willy-nilly, right? Like I sort of just follow this vague path, you know what I mean? Like I read the Bible and I gotta go to groups and go to church and I pray, I blah blah blah. And okay, all fine and good. But most people have no plan. Like they don't have a clear plan. Right. And so when you look at the 12 steps, it's a clear plan and it's gospel based. Right.
Yeah.
In fact, the 12 steps derive from a Christian organization called the Oxford Group. And so steps 1 to 3 are really about getting your relationship with God straightened out, right? And most Christians think, oh, I've already got that. Like I gave my life to Jesus. It's like, well, maybe you only sort of do. Because I think if you're really a person of faith, you're sorting out your relationship with God for the rest of your dang life. Like,
yeah.
And anyone who says, oh, I know I've got it all buttoned up, it's usually anxiety talking when they say that. It's like, because I can't imagine, well, what if, you know, like there's uncertainties in this and there's this and, you know, in fact, you know what the opposite of faith is?
What is it?
Certainty. It's not doubt. It's certainty. Certainty is, you know, supposedly cancels doubt out, but actually it's a strange kind of anxious, I have to be certain. It's got to be, you know, it's like, well, actually life is filled with uncertainties and faith is filled with mysteries and it feels uncertain a lot of the time, right? So 1 to 3, straighten out your relationship with God. 4 through 7, straighten out your relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. 8 and 9, straighten out your relationship with other people. Mm-hmm. And then 10 through 12, cultivate a lifestyle that supports health and growth in each of those domains of your life moving forward. That's it. It's just simple genius. God, yourself, and others. Figure it out. And then work those steps, maybe not in order, every single day. Like, draw on the wisdom found in those steps every day. And you will find that your life takes on a new meaning and a new purpose. And you find that you're more useful to God in the world.
Those first three. My favorite was your summary. Step one, I can't.
Yes.
Step two, God can. Step three, I think I'll let him.
Yes. Those are the summaries of the three steps,
yeah,
right?
That to me was steps. Like, okay, that's how you work when you say work the steps every day. If I can keep the phrases that start the 12 steps super right at top of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm picturing a mom of teenagers right now. I have one in college. There's a lot of like, I felt like I had a lot of control. This false, you know, a lot of the book is the control aspect we think we have. And then they become their own people.
Yes.
And they individuate.
The little rats.
Those people. I did it all so right. I kept the rules. I followed the formula.
Yes,
and then you became humans.
Ugh. Yes.
So I feel like those three phrases, if mom, if you're listening and you're like, I'm really, it's hitting and it's causing areas of addiction, whether it's shopping addiction, whether it's people pleasing out, going crazy, or maybe it is drinking, like you mentioned, has taken an all-time high, or other addictions since COVID. So those three of like, I can't.
Yes. And actually, most people, even Christians, live by this mantra. I can't, but I'm going to try.
If I have the right verse, if I throw the right verse at it, is what I see. I pray the right prayer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I only get control. Yeah.
But even that's control.
Yes.
But now you're just trying to control God.
Yes.
It's
that's
like,
what I'm
okay,
trying to
God,
say.
I'm going to find the magic words that, and by the way, you know what that's called? That's not faith. That's called magic. Magic is when you try to get a power greater than you to like rubbing a genie lamp. If I just say the right words, you know, hocus pocus or whatever, then I can get this deity to do what I want them to do, which if they would only cooperate with me, then life would work out okay. Right. So honestly, like you think about a mom and they're in the car and they're driving. And they have a kid that's in crisis or has problems or is living a life they don't think is best for them. And they're doing everything in their power to manipulate that kid, to pressure that kid subtly or not so subtly into being a different person, right? But the kid is 20 and it's like too late. It's like, I'm sorry, it's too late, right? You are no longer a cop. You're not even a coach. You're a consultant. Right. Like you're not at this point.
And right? You may not be called in on this job.
Yeah. You may not be called in on this job. And so that's when you have to say to yourself those first three steps. Right. It's like, I can't. And by the way, when you say I can't and you mean it from the bottom of your heart, when you say I am powerless over my child, because the first step is we admitted we were powerless over in this situation, my kid, and that it's making my life unmanageable. I'm miserable. I'm anxious. I'm angry. I'm resentful. That's unmanageability. That's the first step, right? And when you finally say, I can't, all of a sudden this blissful state of relief washes over you and you realize I am not in control here.
Yeah.
And then you realize this weight comes off you. And then you go to the next step, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And by the way, while you're in the car, angry, resentful, anxious, frightened, all that stuff, like you're insane.
No, yeah, you're feeling it. You're like, right? I don't love that this is the version of me right now.
Yeah.
Maybe you're even aware of the like chaos in your mind or the feelings of
exactly. And that's unmanageability and powerlessness. Yeah. That's what you're feeling.
Yeah.
And then the third step turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him, right? It's like at this point, you have to say, God, this kid is your kid first, not mine. And you care about them more than I do. And you know what's best mm-hmm. for them more than I do. And so help me to be a loving, available presence to them as they try to make their way through this life. It's their story now, and they're writing it. And I'm just going to turn my will and my life over to your care and them. And that's the first three steps. You haven't even moved. You're still in the line at the school waiting to drop off, you know?
Well, and I do think, and we kind of, you talked about a little bit, but in step two, I found it really refreshing reading, you know, the concept of the people who are coming to 12-step who either have been atheists or, you know, whatever view they have of higher power, I found it refreshing to really consider what is my view of God, because it's going to be real hard to let God be in control of your kids if you do not trust him.
Yes.
He does not seem trustworthy to you, or he seems angry with you, or like whatever your view is, to really sit with that was, I thought, good.
Yeah. You know, I've been around a minute, right? And so what I've learned is that there's constant updating that needs to happen in our relationship with God. And that shouldn't surprise us. That shouldn't frighten us. For some people, it's a little spooky, but really, frankly, your understanding, you know, God may not change, but your understanding of God has to change all the time. Because it's, you know, let's face it, it's a low def picture. And as time goes on, it becomes higher and higher def in some ways. And so we always have to be open, honest, and willing, and to say, God's revealing new things to me all the time about who he is. And am I availing myself of that wisdom, you know?
Yeah. That he doesn't need us to define it perfectly was so, no. I thought so encouraging. Like, would you not help someone if they called you by the wrong name?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
That was a great example. Y'all need to read that chapter, I guess. I also want to lean into, when we talk about inventories, that's the hard work of writing down. It's the step four. It's the, here we go, buckle up, buttercup, taking ownership of our part. And even the resentment inventory, I was thinking about moms again. This is a mom focused podcast, but I was just thinking about, who do you want to be as an 80-year-old mom? And do you want to have this long list of resentments you hold against your kids and they never want to be around you because
yeah, right.
this and all I did for you, la, 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 and this is how you repay me? Anyway, I was thinking about that piece, but talk to us if that mom is listening about owning our own part in relationships.
Yeah, so now we're into these steps 4 through 7, where it's like looking at our own lives, who we are, and making peace with ourselves.
Yeah.
Most people have no idea how to make peace with themselves. And most people, if they really could get at it, I think they'd say, what I really want is to feel at peace with my life. Mm. That my life matters, that I've made mistakes. You know what I mean? Like just making peace with it. But that takes a minute, right? It takes a little effort. And so step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So we're going to go and in the book and in the workbook, I show people exactly in a very practical way how to do it.
Super
so it's
helpful.
Not just abstract ideas, right? It's like, no, okay, here's how you do it.
There is a specific name you will write down of.
Yeah.
When you were 8 years old, you will.
Yeah. So as a therapist, as a priest, as somebody that has spends a lot of time with people who share very intimate things with me, I am amazed all the time at how many resentments people carry around that they don't even know they're carrying around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. Like resentment with parents, with their children for not becoming the people they wanted them to be, right? Or for whatever reason, right? Not being grateful enough. Or you're resentful with your third grade teacher who embarrassed you in front of the, you're still carrying that around, you know, your ex-husband or your current husband, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's like resentments. It's like, and you don't have any idea of what a drag that is on your ability to move forward, right? It's like you're just dragging weight behind you. Yeah. And it's like when you can look at your resentments and face to face, and then also what was your part in the formation of that resentment, right? Like I had a person I've worked with, and she had a terrible divorce and was really betrayed by their husband, right? And they said to me one time, I have so much resentment. And I said, well, so tell me your part in it. And they were like, I had nothing to do with it. Like I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's bad news, right? Because if you are just a 100% victim in this scenario, then your ex-husband has all the power. You have no power, right? And then we began to explore it. And then at the very least, she was able to say, well, I didn't have anything to do with his, you know, affair. However, for the last 3 years, I have organized my identity around that violation. And I have played the victim card for 3 years. And that's my participation in that relationship and in the resentment. And I have to get on with my life and stop that, you know? So there's a lot of ways resentment shows up. We all have resentment work to do. That's just one of three inventories, you know?
Well, and you said there could be even more inventories. I mean, it's right. Like and five. I mean,
yeah, we all got skeletons in the closet inventory. We have fear inventory, which is really powerful.
Wow. Yeah.
And then step five, though, here's where it gets even a little harder.
Wasn't fun enough.
Yeah, yeah. Then we have to admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, right? So this is really important. And this is where, you know, sometimes people can be like, I don't want to do that. It's like, no, you have to do that. Like, my sponsor is a very, very funny guy. Super, super smart, super wise, super funny. And he's like, he said to me one time, he goes, you know, Ian, not everybody needs to know everything about you, but somebody does, right? Like, somebody does need to know everything about you, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to go to another human being and sit down and go, okay, here are my resentments. Here's my part in how those relationships went sideways. Here's my fears. Let me tell you about my sexual misadventures back in college and high school or whatever. And then I've got to also talk about some skeletons in the closet that I've never shared with anybody. Because the truth of the matter is that we get sick alone and we get well together. It's just a truth, right? And then what happens is you discover, oh, wait a minute. I'm actually not alone. Everybody has these. And not only that, I'm forgivable. And actually, when I shared it with that person, they shared things with me about their own lives that were similar. And I realized it's not that special. And that actually, my sin hasn't been all that creative. It's just the same old stuff people have been doing for millennia. You know?
I say that the enemy is not creative. He's just crafty. He takes things and he twists it. But it's the same old, same old. Yeah.
Yeah. When I have sponsees, right? In my program, what that means is people younger in the program that need someone to help them walk through the steps.
Yeah.
Someone will invariably say something to me like, I am the worst of all sinners. And I'm like, don't flatter yourself. I'm like, really? Like, you've really, you know, go ahead. I dare you to shock me, you know, like really.
I've heard a few stories. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You're not going to shock me, you know? Yeah. And because I just know what the human condition is like. And I know what we're all capable of, including myself, and the crazy things we do to make life easier. And it's such good news when you do a fifth step and you're able to share this with another person, then, you know, it's like you experience a level of freedom you've never had before. Mm-hmm. Actually, in the book, in the workbook, you know, I know that some people are like, I'm not ready to go to OA for overeaters or to AA or NA or any of those things. Al-Anon, although I think everybody could benefit from Al-Anon. I don't think there's anyone who can't benefit from Al-Anon.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Or CODA, right? Codependency Anonymous.
Yeah.
So I just say, look, why don't you just get a group together and go through the steps and then, you know, pick someone in the group that you can do that step five with. And so you can start. There's no reason. You don't need a license. Right. There's no certification board. Can't have a meeting until you're, you know.
Yeah. Licensed by AA. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's like, nope. You can just start your own little 12-step group and do it for 8 weeks or something like that and have at it.
And it's the spiritual side. I love how you emphasize over and over and over again that if we could fix ourselves, we would. Like, we are well past the combo about you fixing you. Like, this is not...
That's what my sponsor said to me years ago. He goes, yeah, Ian, we are well past any conversation about you fixing you.
This is not that. This is group work, but spiritual level work. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you've heard of like inner healing prayer. Have you heard of that phrase? Or like, they call it all different kinds of names. But in my mind, anytime I've led an inner healing prayer session with someone who's worked through the steps, the depth of getting to the core spiritual, like an uprooting, is so much faster.
Yes.
Like they already have done the work of knowing like, well, this is where it started and this is how I was feeling and this is what I was believing. And the confession and like repentance, like you talk about, is more just, this is what happened because, you know, I'm not repenting for the abuse as far as I'm not responsible for its happening, but I am responsible for what happened to me after and how I carried this identity, like you said about the divorce example you gave, the identity that I took on, the belief I have about myself, God, or others. I would love to like release that and be free of that and align with God and say, now, God, who do you say I am? Because I'd rather that.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Everybody wants transformation, right?
Yeah.
But I think in the world of faith that there's a lot of confusion about how that happens. And it's actually, it's because Christianity is actually so simple, we want to make it hard.
Totally.
It's like, what are we doing here? It's like, we just make it hard. We add all these levels of things we have to do. And here's as I understand the gospel and grace, right? Like most people think they're in a path of transformation, but actually they're on a path of reformation.
Oof.
And reformation is sort of trying to be like Jesus on your own unaided effort. Right. It's like you get up and another way of putting that is that's called taping fruit to trees. Right. it's like I'm just going to go out there and just be as loving as I can, you know, and be as kind and gentle and patient. And, you know, and it's like you've got it backwards. Like I appreciate your good intentions, but you just have it wrong because reformation is actually in opposition to the gospel of grace.
Tell me more.
Well, transformation is when you simply give God consent to do for you what you cannot do for yourself.
Yeah.
You can't make yourself more like God. You can't will it. In fact, the moment you start to will it, you're in opposition to what grace is all about. And so basically what we have to do, the work for me in the spiritual life, is about giving God consent to change me.
Yeah.
And then if I do that, it will start to happen on its own. And I have seen this repeatedly in my life. When I finally surrender, when I finally say I'm powerless, when I finally say you have to do it, which isn't to say I don't, you know, suit up and show up every day. But what it means is I'm no longer doing that to try and earn anything.
Yeah.
I'm just doing it to give God consent to change me into his likeness, if you will, or whatever you want to say, however you want to put that. And that consent is hard work because there is this little ego inside that's like, yeah, but I still think I could do this on my own. You know what I mean? Or you know, I think I'll just give up 75% of that problem and like keep 25% to myself. It's like, you're just better off laying down, you know, like, and just giving up.
Jesus is the same, right? He's the same. Jesus is the same. He was and he is and today. And he's a gentleman. Anytime I've interacted with Jesus in prayer times for people's healing or that transformation, he's a gentleman. And I vividly remember this came to mind as you were talking, a gal who her dad had called her all kinds of names. And when she was picturing it, she was picturing like an arrow stuck in right under her shoulder. And when we invited Jesus into it, Jesus asked, you know, would you like me to remove that? He didn't just come walk up and just yank the air out. And it was like, it took her a second. Am I willing to allow him to do this healing work on me?
Yes. And if somebody's really honest sometimes, they're going to be like, you know what? It hurts, but I just don't know who I'd be without the arrow.
Yes. That was my experience. Yeah. What will I be without this matted, ugly fur coat of like, the identity I've been holding on to.
Yes. And that's why steps 6 and 7 are so important, right? And they look like the easiest steps, but they're the hardest. 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. There's the arrow you're pointing
There's
to,
the
right?
Arrow. Yeah.
And then the seventh one is humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So in other words, that sounds really simple. Like, who doesn't want to have all your shortcomings removed, right? Like, this is a breeze. I'm just going to like go,
it's
hey,
easy.
Whatever.
It's
No, actually there are shortcomings we have that we cannot imagine living without because we've made them work for us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I do. I'm very aware of how they work for me in relationship.
Yeah, right.
What? How would I interact with people in a conversation if I wasn't trying to fix for them their problems?
Exactly.
What would my role be in the conversation?
Exactly. What if I had boundaries? Oh my gosh.
What would happen?
What would happen if I said no for once? And by the way, that's a compulsive. Like, think about that. That is an unhealthy relationship with people.
Yep.
That has mood altering effect. Because every time you do it, you feel great about yourself. You just see the smile and the appreciation on their face. And you're like, ooh, that's like a drug. And then it has negative consequences because you're exhausted, burned out, resentful, because you're always doing things for other people. They're never doing enough for you, even though, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you have an addiction and you can get over that.
Yeah, no, that's for a mom right now that's listening. Yes, especially... You know, as we head into a new year, let's think about that. If we want to have a new way of moving forward into the year and what we're saying yes to. And yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I know we have a little bit of time. You want to tell us the other steps? Like, I know we did a broad stroke, but 8, 9, I know there's a lot more.
So 8 and 9, I know. Well, 8 and 9 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made a list.
That's literally where I think people are like, I'm good. Peace out.
Yeah.
12 step.
Yeah.
This is getting too hard.
Yeah. And by the way, that's just pride.
And
fear. Right. But sometimes we just say, I'm afraid, but actually it's pride. But you have to make a list of all the people you've harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. So that's a really lovely step, right? Because it actually says, okay, first of all I got to do is make a list. Okay. No problem. But it's also recognizing this is hard, right? And so we just first have to become willing to make amends to people, right? We just need to clean up our side of the street. A lot of us carry guilt, shame, unprocessed business with other people from the past. And again, we just don't have any idea of how much it's dragging us down. Yeah. And then the next step after that is 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, here's my experience with that, right? Like, going to people and saying, look, you know, here's how I know that I hurt you. And I just want to ask your forgiveness and ask if there's anything I can do to make it up. Now, usually in my experience, people are like, wow, thank you. Like, this is awesome. You know, I remember I did this with a work colleague and I had to make an amends. And they said, wow, way to be a good human. and they were like,
that feels good. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, just take me to lunch. And, we'll forget about it, you know, and most people are very gracious. Sometimes you've really hurt somebody and, you know, you have to go back to an ex-spouse or to a child that you hurt or to, you know, we human beings let human beings down all the time. Mm-hmm. And we carry the luggage of that. And it's like, you know, there's actually a way out of this. And by the way, this is such a biblical idea, right? It's just and I don't know why people don't do it more often. Like, why was I never told?
Because of shame and because.
Yeah. And it's like the only way. Yeah. It's embarrassing. It's all that stuff. But you know what? It's humbling, right? It's very humbling to go to somebody and say, look, I kind of screwed you over and I'm sorry. And, or I wasn't there in your hour of need. And because I was too feeling inadequate to, you know, deal with your pain, you know, or whatever it is.
Whatever
right.
The reason. Yeah.
And just to go back and we call it cleaning your side of the street. Just keep your side of the street clean in life. So those are two very powerful steps. They're a little spooky, but again, who said this was going to be easy, right? The way is narrow, people. Like, why is this a surprise? Like, you know, people are like, I don't want to do that. It's like, have you been reading the same Bible I've been reading? Like,
you know,
I don't know.
Easier, Ian, is for me to tell other people how to live their life in a comment on Instagram. That's much easier than to do the work of figuring out my side of the street.
Yeah.
You know, I've stumbled upon a quote and everyone here has already heard it because I wrote a book about it. The quote is, the Hebrew definition of humility is to fully occupy your God-given space. So in humility, I'm filling my space to recognize my side of the street. Like, that is the humbling. This is my part. And when I overstep my space into your space, that's the pride. Like, you know right. What you should do? Because how many times was I reading your book and I was thinking, you know who should really read this?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's called
how
your
many?
Ego. Yeah. That's called your ego.
Like
most people don't know very much about their own ego. And I discuss it in the book at pretty good length.
Yeah.
Right. You need to be pretty aware that there's a part of you, this little narcissistic, power crazy part of you, you know, that makes a mess out of your life. And all the while is whispering in your ear, don't worry, honey, I got this. And it's like, you know, meanwhile, it's like banging guardrail to guardrail, like through life. Right. And you just keep listening to it. You just keep listening to it and doing whatever it tells you. And one of the cool thing about the 12 steps is like, I've learned like when my ego is, I mean, I'm not perfect at it, but I have a better than average sense of when my ego is in charge and is like making a mess of stuff. And then, by the way, we get into step 10 after those two, right? And that is basically continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So it's just, okay, well, now that I've cleaned up, now we're into the maintenance steps, 10 through 12, right? And then step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So do you see, like, this is a kind of posture. Like, it's not like a fundamentalist read of this. I'm going to like literally do this all the time. It's actually an inner posture. It's like, I'm just going to own my stuff in this life. I'm going to continue to do regular self-examination in a way that's non-shaming and non-blaming. It's just like I'm never surprised when I make mistakes. I'm just not surprised. Like, if you're reading the same Bible I am, like, there should be no surprise or blame or shame. It's like, oh yeah, that's what humans do, you know, and I did it. And now I have to go and
make it right. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I got a disturbance in the force, as it said in Star Wars, and I have to go and get the wrinkle out of it. Right. And so it's just a way of moving through the world with less and less friction and more peace.
I hope y'all, if you have never engaged in the 12 steps, that your mind was just blown and you're so excited. And like the subtitle says, that you get on the surprising path of transformation for the well-adjusted, the down and out, and everyone in between. Like, wherever you find yourself on that spectrum of addiction, I'm just really thankful for you, Ian, and for doing this work, and that there is a workbook, and that groups could do this, and that we could gather in community and be with each other. So thank you for all that you've done to gather this resource.
Yeah, well, thank you.
What are you hopeful with this book? What do you hope?
Well, my hope is that a broad audience of people would be introduced to the 12 steps, and they would find that they can derive all the same benefits that the people in the basement of their churches do, and they can experience the same level of transformation, that their spiritual life could be organized around an actual plan of action. Like, oh, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And maybe it's for a season. Maybe, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you got to like become a 12-step person for the rest of your life, but you should know them and you should try them. And you may discover that it does become a design for living that you use for the rest of your life as just a way of being in the world. And when you do, you can know for sure that the way that you're living your life is in alignment and your values are in alignment with those of God, right? It's like so simple. It's like, let's get it right with God.
Yeah.
Let's get it right with myself. Let's get it right with other people. And then let's just figure out how to do that all the days moving forward. And so that's what they offer to us. And I want everybody to have the chance to do it. So I'll just end with a quick story.
Yes.
So there was a guy I called Gene in the book. It's not his real name, but he was pastor of a big evangelical church. And he had a secret drinking problem, right? Now, we could replace that with other problems, but that was his. And he shows up to church drunk one morning. Only alcoholics can laugh about this stuff, right?
Okay. Because so sad. And you're
laughing. Well, it is. Well, but here's the thing. You know, when you actually do begin to own your own stuff, you actually, weirdly enough, develop a sense of humor. It's like, oh yeah, well, this is what humans do to fix themselves. You know, it's like,
the guy's in pain. The shame has kind of left the room. The shame.
Exactly. And by the way, that's another thing the 12 steps will do, right? They shoo shame out of the room, right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And so it's like.
So he shows up.
He shows up drunk. He gets halfway into his sermon. Elders figure it out. And they escort him out. But rather than get him help, which is what they should have done.
Yeah.
They should have just said, oh, guess what? He's a sinner too. I mean, are they reading the same Bible? You know, it's like, why are we surprised?
I'm amazed at all the non-sinners that are at churches. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Like, right?
Do they not need Jesus too? I thought we all did. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, we put leaders under such unfair standards, you know, and part of that is just like, you should be living the Christian life I ought to be living. And that's what I'm paying you to do. So anyway, they fire him instead of get him help, right? Which is, I think, appalling, but whatever. So I'm in a church with him, not his church, but a different church. We're at a 12-step meeting in the basement. And he goes, you know, it's ironic, isn't it? He said, I've experienced more grace, love, acceptance, healing, and transformation in the basement than I ever experienced or saw experienced upstairs.
Yeah.
And he said, which is not, I mean, it's a little binary, but whatever. But he has a point, right? Which is like, there's like such an opportunity for people to experience the kind of transformation that Scripture describes, and if they do this work of practicing the steps, and at the very least, you know, maybe you have a brother who's in the program, or a sister, or a spouse, and you ought to understand the 12 steps. You ought to understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so, or you know somebody who's got a problem, and their problem may be workaholism, or their problem may be alcohol, or their problem, and they really need to sort their life out, right? So if you feel like, okay, it's not for me, but I'm going to give it away to somebody, again, it's a great opportunity to start a conversation.
The trick is, Ian, I want to give it to everybody because they all need help and I'm good. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. Yes. Hello, ego.
Hello, ego. No, I think it's great. And for you listening who are of faith, the Christian faith, I do think Ian does a really good job of presenting faith, but in an invitational way for those who are outside of it to not feel excluded, but presented with what's actually going to help. So thank you, Ian, for doing that.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me. It's a thrill. I've been a big fan for a long time. So thank you for coming.
Thank
on the
you,
show.
Heather. What a delight. What a wonderful conversation.
You've made the time to listen to this episode. You made it this far in the episode. And I know as a mom who is constantly on the go that my reflection time is minimal to not at all. And my distractions, whether it's on my phone or whatever it is, or just basic needs of life, work, etc., don't allow for it. So I thought I would give us space that maybe something you heard from Ian has pricked your heart, your spirit. And I'm going to quote him. He said he realized his addiction wasn't the problem, but only the symptom, that he was in emotional, psychological, and spiritual pain, and he was looking for a fix, an external solution to an internal problem. So I'd love to take a second, and I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to give 10 seconds of silence for you to ask the Spirit, what is it? What are you going to fix an internal problem outside of Jesus? So here we go. I'm going to pray. Lord, we all have this space that is for you, that is meant for you to come in and heal the brokenness that is a part of each and every one of us. And yet, through life circumstances, through wounding, we go to other things. And some of them, everyone applauds us going to. And some of them are not giving us the abundant life that we know you have for us, the joy and the love, and they're hurting the people around us and they're hurting ourselves. And so, Holy Spirit, if those things have not come to mind, I pray that you would bring them to the mind of the person listening. And you would comfort them to know that nothing is too messy or too big for your healing, for your transformation, that you only simply ask that we bring it to you. We stop hiding so that we can come and walk into the healing that comes from your Spirit's work in community. Lord, I pray for the person listening that there wouldn't be a spirit of denial or a spirit of discouragement or any spirit of distraction, they would lean into this little prompting that you're giving them to take the next step. Whether it's reading more, whether it's signing up for a group, whether it's telling one person, hey, I keep going to this thing to fix a problem that only God can fix. Give us the bravery to acknowledge it, to see it, and to bring it to you. Holy Spirit, in the next 10 seconds, please bring to mind anything that the person listening needs to hear. Thank you, God, that you are living and active and at work, and nothing is too big for you, that you can heal us, that you can manage our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. He is a God who loves you. He can be trusted. He is for you, even if life circumstances are hard right now. So thank you for joining me this week. I'll see you back here next week.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.